Hi everyone, I'm Katie Dawson and welcome to Super Creative, a podcast that delivers candid conversations with inspiring women who are thriving in business. Today on the podcast, I speak to Katie Mandy, founder of the New Zealand botanical skincare brand, Ray. After 15 years working in the creative industry for other high-profile names in luxury beauty, Katie launched her own active botanical skincare brand just over a year ago. Ray represents a new realm in skincare. With the antioxidant power of New Zealand botanicals and backed by the latest ingredients in cosmeceutical science, Ray is looking to redefine the clean cosmeceutical skincare game. I first became aware of Ray not long after its launch. Suddenly, I saw all these beautiful bottles everywhere and I was instantly intrigued. From an interested observer, every aspect of this brand launch seemed to hit the mark. Unique packaging, gorgeous branding and imagery, creative content and storytelling. And of course, alongside the beautiful exterior, the inside really counted too. The products themselves have launched to rave reviews, global awards and an instant cult following. I really enjoyed this chat with Katie. I loved hearing how far Ray has come. This brand has made a significant impact in the short time since launch, and for me personally, it's always just so wonderful to see a business that places so much importance on brand and marketing, and to see that commitment pay off. Following our chat, Katie very kindly sent me some Ray products to try, and I have to say, in the most authentic and non-spon way, they are amazing. I've not used vitamin C and retinol style skincare products before, and I was a little bit apprehensive about trying something outside of my routine. However, as we discussed in this episode, I'm not getting any younger and neither is my skin. So I was super interested to see how these products might work. At the time of recording this intro, I'm about 1 month in. My skin is feeling really, really good. And Katie says it takes about 3 months to notice any change, but I'm definitely finding my skin feeling really clear, and while full disclaimer, I don't actually have heaps of wrinkles yet, I do feel like I'm seeing a visible difference already to the ones that I do have. So anyway, no one actually asked me for my 2 cents on these products, but as Katie was so lovely to send them to me, I figured I'd share my experience so far. To learn more about Ray after this episode, visit ray.co.nz, that's RAAIE.co.nz, or you can follow the brand on Instagram at __RAAIE__. I know you will love my chat with Katie as much as I did. Enjoy. Hi, Katie, and welcome to my podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me. I love your podcast, so I'm very happy to be here.
I would like to start off by getting you to describe who you are and what you do.
Hi, I'm Katie. I'm the founder of Ray, an active botanical skincare brand made here in New Zealand that harnesses the self-healing powers of our native land, sea, and alpine botanicals.
So I've started off these podcasts now explaining a little bit to my guests how I've come about your product and what I've found interesting about it. Because I think it's always, every time I talk to someone, there's usually something that has caught my eye about the brand or the business, etc. Sometimes it's that I know the person, but today we don't know each other. But I came across your brand ages ago, I think probably around the time it launched. And looking back since we've decided to talk, I feel like, and you're going to tell me the whole story, I feel like you have done the perfect recipe of launching a new brand.
Wow.
And the reason I say that is because when I look across at the at all of it, at the product, at the brand, at the socials, all of it, the marketing, everything, it feels like you've hit every point really well. And so
I would
love to talk to you about all of that and all of that journey. Yeah. And also a little bit of background about me is that 15 or so years ago, I worked for a very small startup organic skincare brand in New Zealand.
Really?
That doesn't exist anymore. That's another whole off-air story. But we were very much, there was about 5 New Zealand brands at that time. I think we were one of the first certified organic brands. It was out of Hamilton, had a small factory. And so I actually, 15 years ago, the landscape was quite different, but I know a little bit about that journey, and it's made me aware of what you've achieved so far is what seems to be pretty epic. So I really am interested to know everything, every little detail about Ray, how it started and everything like that. But as on this podcast, I like to take it back. I like to get into the details. So let's talk a little bit first about your background, where you're from. Did you study? All of the things, first jobs, et cetera, et cetera.
From the beginning. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Brilliant. I was born in Sydney, so I should probably just confess that. But came to New Zealand when I was very young, about 3. Had a pretty normal childhood, went to school, didn't really know what I wanted to be, didn't have some big aspiration to be a skincare brand founder or anything like that. And I think back then we didn't have all the information at our fingertips that the kids do now. There was no like TikTok day in the life of a social media executive, let alone any idea of what that job entailed. I remember going to a career advisor because she used to sit down with one of them in seventh form and she was like, look, got the marks to go to law school, off you go. And so I just did that and got down to law school and I was like, oh no, this is not me. It's like these endless kind of dense paragraphs and like rules, so many rules. So I transferred to a marketing degree because that just, I don't know, felt snazzy, a bit more creative. And even when I finished that, I was like, oh God, you know, what next? And I remember with quite a pinnacle moment, my friend's dad worked for quite a well-known advertising agency in Auckland. And for some reason, he took us up there on a Friday afternoon. And there was this scene and they were all standing around in this bar and playing pool and drinking. And I was like, what is this? Like,
I want this.
Yeah. These people are getting paid. Is this an option? And so I managed to convince someone to give me a kind of unpaid internship. I think I just kept showing up. And I just loved it. I loved the kind of creative, fast pace, all these young people coming up with ideas, solving these problems. And I think there was this energy when there was a really good idea, it felt like everyone just put their pens down and were like, how are we going to make this happen? Like the whole company would rally around it. And I really loved that. And I was like, I need to stay here. I just thought, if you become indispensable, they'll have to keep you around. So I put my hand up for everything. I stayed late. I just took on all the projects. I thought if they start relying on me, they might pay me. And eventually they did.
They did. Yeah, good. Yeah.
They did. And then moved to FCB, which is another agency in New Zealand. And you had a wonderful time there as well.
Were you sort of in the account manager role? Yes. Is that where you've headed to? Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I was in account management. And then moved up to London, as many people, particularly in that industry, do. I think it's quite easy to transfer. And then got up to London. That was like next level in terms of budgets and just the scale of things.
Did you get a job in advertising straight away when you got to?
And I was lucky. I knew some people who had already left and kind of put me in touch with people. So that was pretty lucky. But yeah, it was next level in London. It was like I was doing M&S ads with Twiggy and Ryan Reynolds and Rosie Huntington-Whiteley. And the budgets, like I remember working on GHD and we were like, we should get Katy Perry for this shoot because, you know, we'll do all these hairstyles on her. And the next minute we're on a plane to LA shooting with David LaChapelle, which is a photographer that I loved. And so I was having the best time. I met my husband at that agency, Y&R London. He's like a cute copywriter at the time. I was supposed to be briefing him on a radio ad and we got a bit distracted. But
I love it. Yeah. You
know, so yeah, I was working there. I was about 8 years and I found myself specializing in fashion and beauty. I just was passionate about it and kept putting my hand up for those new pitches that were coming in. And then I moved to a company called Spring Studios, which was started off as a production house for kind of luxury fashion and beauty. And then they got the creative director of UK Vogue. And that was a really interesting approach because it was more about...
Who was that?
Robin Derrick.
Okay. Yes, I know that.
He was at the helm of British Vogue for 20 years and he came over. And so that was about more editorial storytelling, engaging rather than interrupting. And it was really at the beginning of social media where brands...
I was going to say, it sounds like the beginning of content.
Exactly. At that time, and brands went from interrupting you for 30 seconds and shoving all the information in to having to have so much content across all these channels and just trying to navigate that. And so he was at a really interesting point and as that industry was changing. That was really fun and I adored working with him and moved to New York. Half moving. I was 2 weeks in New York, 2 weeks in London for a couple of years where we set up Spring Studios New York, which is now where most of New York Fashion Week is held. And so we're setting that up and doing some really cool, meaty, strategic projects in the beauty industry where we would map out the global beauty industry, look at the trends shaping it over the next 20, 30 years at the big macro trends. And then we'd look where the hotspots were and start to build brands from the ground up for people. And I just loved that. That was like really big, meaty, interesting strategic work. And so that's 13 years I'd been in London doing all of this. And I married the copywriter, had a house, had a baby, and was just having the best time.
Can I just interrupt you there? Mm-hmm. I want to talk about London because I feel like often I talk to young people now and they're very, especially this world where you can build a business when you're 20 and all of that kind of thing. And I speak to a lot of young people now that they're not really that interested in traveling, or they're not quite, they're doing it all. They're starting businesses in their 20s. Like, you see it quite a lot. And I did London slightly different to you. I feel like I not wasted my time, but, and it was probably a bit before your time, but I focused more on the travel and the lifestyle. Now I look back, I'm like, oh, in hindsight, I should have done what it seems you've done, and you probably traveled as well, but career opportunity, like what you get overseas compared to New Zealand, because we're so small and we just don't have the access, like the experiences from what you've talked about are just, you can't compare that to here. So getting that international experience is a university in itself.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah, absolutely. And just the scale of things, the access to global renowned kind of photographers and stylists and makeup artists and everything, you definitely do. What I did find interesting about coming back to New Zealand though, is when you're in that much bigger countries, you get so many layers of bureaucracy and that can be stifling creatively. Right. In New Zealand, you've got smaller teams. We're quite brave creatively. And so I did find New Zealand has its own very creative drive, I think, that you can get stuff done, just make it happen. A lot of British agencies loved having Kiwis out there because we really just had that kind of get it done attitude. Mm. And I would just take everything on and just manage to sort it out. So I think, yeah, you do get the scale and the experience is incredible. But there's also something quite cool about the industry that we have here.
Yeah. I'm such a firm believer in everyone should work overseas.
Yes.
At some point in their life and just experience the world and bring it back. Yeah. I wish I'd done that. I did the travel thing. I did the living overseas, but I love that you got that industry experience and that worldview at the same time.
Yes. Yeah, totally. I think just being overseas and appreciating all these different ways of living and cultures and value systems is helps you to understand what's special about here and it puts that in good light. So we were up there and it was all going great, and then I just got that call that I think you dread if you're living overseas, like the worst call, which was that my mum had cancer. It was like bone marrow cancer, myeloma, which I didn't even know was a thing, but here you go. And I remember looking at my husband and he said, we've got to go. Like, we never forgive yourself if you don't. Mum and I had a very intense, close relationship. And so we packed up and moved back to New Zealand, and she passed away after a little while. And it was just the most earth-shattering thing for me. I was in quite a dark place. Honestly, if I didn't have my kids to make me get up and feed them and just have to do the practical stuff, I don't know how I would have got through it. As I said, I had a very close relationship. We moved here when I was 3. She didn't have a good relationship with my dad. He was an alcoholic. He was quite violent. And I remember having memories of that when I was quite young. And so she picked up our lives and moved it to New Zealand, which was incredibly brave. She was a fashion designer, one of the first New Zealand, or she was Australian, in Australia at the time, but left her business, built her business, left her business, walked away. And she had to pretend that we were going back for Christmas and never return and then start from scratch. And so she did. She started from scratch as a mother of children now. I think, oh my goodness, how did you do that by yourself? But she did it. She opened this really cool store on the corner of Auckland Lane High Street. And Karen Walker used to come and sit outside her window when she was a fashion student, do her sketches. And
what store was it?
It was called Chrissy R. It was like, if you needed your 80s power suit with your shoulder pads, she was the girl. Oh. And so she was just such an incredible woman. And I always would watch the way that she, you know, she had an incredible way with people. She made people feel amazing. She conducted herself in this beautiful way. So this energy, this warmth kind of energy. And I think when you lose your mother or any close friend or family member, you really find yourself appraising the entirety of them and your relationship with them and who you are, and you learn a lot of, about yourself. And so I was in this quite kind of soul searching once in all four place and having moved back, and I found myself going up to my family farm a lot. So my mum remarried this wonderful man called Reg who brought me up and was an incredible dad to me. He inherited a dairy farm when I was young, and he had no intent, didn't want to be a dairy farmer. And so he was quite ahead of his time. He rewilded the farm back to its native state. He is really an encyclopedic book on all of New Zealand's, particularly Northland's, native botanicals, because he wanted to attract the wildlife and back to the farm and restore it back to its natural state. And so I suppose having been away and looking at ingredients and developing beauty brands, I started asking these questions about how come the Manuka factor is so much higher in New Zealand when they take those same bees and those same trees to Australia and the UK and they just can't get that high UMF? Or what's the volcanic soil doing to this fungi? And what happens with all this extra UV that we have here? How are the plants reacting to that? We all grew up with like slip, slop, slap mentality, but they also had to learn how to protect themselves to survive in this extreme environment. We have 40% higher UV down here than similar latitudes in North America. And when you think about the fact that 80% of aging is from UV, age, not time, but exposure to UV, you start thinking about how can we use those plants to topically protect ourselves in the way that they've learned to protect themselves. So I was like, this New Zealand ingredients, I really feel like we're just scratching the surface of them. This Australia's had a real moment on the world stage recently with their Kaduku plum and their lime finger and their clays. But I think some of the New Zealand ingredients that we have down here, we're only just really testing for their full therapeutic use. And I think there's a ton of really interesting stuff starting to come out.
Did it just plant the seed then, excuse the pun?
Literally,
you know, like, you're going up there, it's like respite, but you're just spending time up there. And then obviously your business or like your experience brain kicks in.
Yeah.
And you asking those questions. So at what point did you go, there's something in this?
When I started looking into the science behind these New Zealand botanicals, and I was like, why is nobody talking about this? I couldn't see another brand that was really using New Zealand botanicals in a scientific way. Mm-hmm. And the science was there. And so we got botanical experts, cosmetic chemists, different farmers, different sustainability experts, because that was built into the business from day one, and got this team together and just were looking, what's the most clinically proven, what's the most science-driven botanicals that we can find, and started just developing products. And that came quite naturally to me because that's what I'd been doing.
Yeah. Back a little bit, obviously you have this, and thank you for sharing that about your mum. Like, she just sounds wonderful. You have this really traumatic experience. You obviously move back on a really quick turnaround.
Yeah.
And did you think, I'll get back into advertising in New Zealand? Or were you like, nah, I'm done with that. I want to find something of my own. Did the seed of wanting to do something of your own start first? Or
I think that's a good question. I think we were coming back to be here for mum, and then we're going to go back to London. We're going to go back to our lives. But then I think whilst coming up with unique stories for these other brands globally, I did always have New Zealand has a very unique flora. 80% of our plants here are endemic, meaning they're not found anywhere else. So when we're trying to look at some Icelandic clay or something, I always had, like, actually, there's a ton of interesting stuff happening down in New Zealand. So I suppose like there was a little flicker of something in the back of my head always, but I don't think I would have had the opportunity to come back and really give that my attention
Yeah. So when you get that kind of idea, do you say to your husband, look, I've got this idea, I want to explore it, are you good with that? Because obviously to even get to that point of talking to people and things like that, it's going to cost you. Yes. You're going to have to put some money in at that point. So at that point, do I just invest a bit of money and see if there's something here, or how does that work?
I think we were like, oh, this is interesting. He's now a director, commercials director. So he's able to work wherever. Mm. I was also, while mum was sick, working for Colenso, which is a New Zealand advertising agency. It was after I had my baby that I had some more space as well to
think.
Yeah, to think. So I was like, oh, let's just explore this a little bit. And he was like, yeah, that's interesting.
But I have to say, I think we were completely naive about money, how much of me.
I've got two young kids. And so it's, I think if I had really laid it out to him, he would have been like, oh, that's a no, hell no. But we,
so it's like, pull a little pot here, put a little pot here, but you're not going, right, well, this point, let's invest X amount into this. We're like, oh yeah, we could pay $500 and talk to a chemist, or we could do that, and then it's boom, it starts adding up.
And then retrospectively looking back, we're like, oh my goodness, that would not have been approved. But too deep now, we're in it. I've got some friends who are founders, and I think there's a certain level of naivety that you have to have.
I think that it's almost the story of most founders, isn't it? That you, if you knew what you knew, you know, you'd possibly not do it, but that's the beauty of it that you
totally
cool. Sorry, I keep interrupting you, but you get this idea, you go, I need to start talking to some people, I need to back this up.
Yeah, exactly. So get all the people in the room, everyone agrees, this is an interesting proposition here. So we just started developing products using the ingredients that we could find that had the most science behind them. We ended up developing a ton of products, but decided to launch with the serums because we wanted it to be an efficacy-driven, results-driven brand. And serums are the kind of heavy lifters in your skincare regime because they've got really small molecules that actually go into your skin and make cellular changes, as opposed to a lot of skincare, which is cosmetic, which is actually predominantly glycerin, which just makes it feel nice and moisturizes on the surface. Mm-hmm. So I wanted people to like use the products and see a result. So it had to be serum. And then the other thing we wanted to do was make it just condense the number of steps. I think this, the beauty industry's got really overcomplicated and you need your 10-step regime, and it's bad actually for your skin because your skin stops doing the job it's supposed to do. It starts producing less oil or more oil or overcompensating and gets confused, overwhelmed. And also from a sustainability perspective, you don't need 10 products a month you're throwing out. So we try to just make one cocktail of ingredients in the morning and another in the night based on what your skin needs at different times of day. So,
at that point, are you, I guess it would have been a journey for you as well, right? Like you start developing products and you're like, actually, this AMPM thing is probably actually all we need, or we could do, like it would have been a real journey of discovery for you. Like when you first started, were you thinking we'll have this suite of products, or were you sure on the simple?
I definitely did develop a suite of products, but I knew that those first products really needed to make a hit. And so I was like, what's going to work the most? Like what's going to get those early results where people are going, oh my God, this actually works. And so I knew that it had to be, it's here. And I was actually only going to launch with one. So I had all this consumer testing that we were doing, which was just like friends and family, just anyone around me. I was like shoving samples into their hands. And I was going to launch with one, and they both came back really with really good results. And so I was like, okay, we'll launch them both. So then we did 2 years of development, different formulations, different combinations. Because one thing to have a list of ingredients, like a recipe, it's another thing when you actually combine them together. How do they interact with each other? So that was a whole thing. And like every time we were testing, like with 30 people or more. So it took a long time.
And there's all the different skin types, isn't there? Yeah. I remember that from my days. You'd have these products that would work amazingly on someone and then 25 people, but the 26 would get a reaction and you'd panic and then realize, oh, actually, no, there's possibly, but it's that process is massive, isn't it? That testing
part. Totally. But what I did note, the reality is definitely there are people with sensitive skin and all of that. 90% of us have combination skin, and we'll get the best results from a really good antioxidant vitamin C in the morning and a good reparative vitamin A at night. Mm-hmm. Like that's a fact. So I knew going into it, that's what I wanted the building blocks to be. And there will be those 10% who can't use actinids or whatever, will have an allergy. But I knew that's what the kind of fundamental that I wanted to start with.
Cool. So you develop the two?
So we launched with the
two. You launched with the two. Yeah. And that, when was that?
April last year.
Yes. It wasn't long ago, was it? So tell me about that. So you finally, I've got lots of questions. So you finally get your product. You're like, we've got it.
Yeah.
At the same time, are you developing your brand, your packaging, all of that kind of thing?
Yeah. And that was the brand. We wanted the brand to be about this complex relationship we have with the sun. This is especially true in New Zealand. On the one hand, we worship her, we adore her. She regulates our serotonin, our melatonin. She is literally life itself. On the other hand, she makes us look wrinkly and damages our skin and all of that. So I love that complexity or that duality of our relationship with her. And we had a lot of fun developing the brand, and it's got this kind of sun worship vibe because these products allow you to be protected and live your best life in the sun with the power of New Zealand botanicals. And so we've got these like pagan symbols that we've put across the products, and we designed the packaging to look like we wanted it to like a sun, a sacred object in many ways. And then there's also, because of this such a strong nature story, with they feel like organic pebbles in your hand or something that could have come from nature. We wanted to do the opposite of a kind of glossier pink thing that was a real trend. Or on the other side of it is that the very science-driven kind of packaging, which is potentially unapproachable unless you're like a complete skincare pro. So we wanted to simplify everything, including the packaging. And so it would just blend into any decor and kind of look like a nice thing you might want to put on display, as opposed to something that you forget about at the back of your vanity. I love doing that. And you're a creative. When you've been working on projects for other people and there's 100 voices and it's potentially something that starts in one place might end up somewhere else. But this, for me, it was such a joy because it was just me, and my husband was also amazing in this respect. But, you know, what if it was just me, what would I do? And that's run exercise. And
who did you use for your branding?
So I've got some friends that are from London who did the word mark, the logo, the packaging we designed together, the actual bottles. And then we did a photo shoot. We used a really cool photographer called Clara, who's a New Zealander. We wanted it all to be very like base. We wanted the brand to live in New Zealand because the ingredients do. So we did a little shoot that we're a startup, help me.
The beauty of it is your experience means that you know what you need. And like the bottles were the first thing. I remember when I saw the brand, it must have popped up on socials or something. But again, harking back to my experience, I was like, wow, they are so cool. But I also love the fact that you don't have 17 different types, because back when I was in that industry, that was half the issue. We had quite a big range of products, about 10 different bottles, pumps. And again, that all adds to it. So by simplifying it all down, but focusing on that really beautiful quality and that really, like, it's so different to anything else that you're seeing, it's a selling point in itself, right? It's a beautiful piece to have on your counter.
Yeah, obviously it's about the formulas, but if it makes someone pick it up and look at it and read more about it, then 100% here for that. And the simplicity, honestly, the bottles, it was about my minimum order quantities on those rolls, because you have to create rolls and that's very expensive. And I was like, the serums, they could be in that bottle. And then as we expand the range, we'll try and be smart about that. Mm. You can spend a lot of money creating custom packaging.
But you have to, it's clever because that's the thing there. Minimum order quantities and things like that are so real for a starter that you can't just go, yeah, we'll do 10,000 of that, 10,000 of that.
No,
it's just not an option. No. So thinking cleverly about those challenges and how you can make those work for you, yet still achieving the aesthetic you want or whatever. And I mean, I feel like, of course, the product is the most important. Yeah. Like, it is the most important thing. And I actually randomly listened to a podcast today with a skincare founder, and it wasn't actually because I was talking to you, it just happened to come on, and she said something along the lines of, ultimately the best, having a product that works is your biggest thing, right? Like, there's no point in any of it, the beautiful brand, if your product doesn't work. And when you've done what you've done and spent all the time developing it and putting the focus on the product, then all the aesthetics are the extra part of it.
We need to stand out always, those things. And skincare's funny because you're selling a promise, right? Unlike fragrance or fashion or anything else, it's like this magical elixir in this bottle, I promise, will make you look younger and more radiant. And so it is it's a very competitive industry. So you do need those things to help to stand out 100%.
So tell me, go back a year, you launch. tell me about the launch. Like, how do you do it? You've got these beautiful little products in your hand. You've got your website, I assume.
Yes.
You start up the socials.
Build the website. Yeah. I knew I needed to do a photo shoot because I thought I needed to do a photo shoot because I come from a brand background. So I wanted to create a world that these bottles lived in, and I wanted to have nice pictures of skin and things. So we did that, built a website, started bringing the social through. I also knew PR was going to be a really important one, I think, especially for skincare, talking about because you're selling a promise. You need someone with credibility to be like, it's good. And that has remained true since we launched. I see a really big uptick. If we get like a thing in Sunday Herald or Viva or something, it genuinely makes a difference. So yeah, we're working with a really cool PR agency who, again, were like some girls just doing their thing, not a big agency. And so we had our PR, our website, our social. We launched, it was at the end of COVID. So we couldn't do like a launch event or anything like that. It was like press release goes out, it sent some products out to media. And the media were really supportive. I think people weren't talking about New Zealand native botanicals in that way. So they were responsive to that, the packaging. So we launched in New Zealand. I thought the other thing I thought was going to be really hard is getting stockists. So I was like, oh, some random brand coming out of nowhere. But I had my like list that I really wanted, like my kind of top five. And they pretty much all said yes, bar one, straight away. I think we've got the New Zealand botanical story. We've also got a very like cosmeceutical side to the brand as well, where we combine the New Zealand botanicals with some really cutting edge ingredients from around the world. And so I think they quite quickly could see that there was some real science there.
Did you do all that? Is that just you like writing your list, contacting people? Yeah. Hey, I've got this brand.
Bringing up. And yeah. there was a day where one of my best friends said to me, I was like, I've got the product. And when you work for an agency, people come to you and they want your service. Yeah. So go, and they're like, you're going to have to get out, get in your car with your products and just show up and sell it. And I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
But I had to put my big girl pads on and go and do that.
Lots of lessons in humility, right? When it's your own business and you're not under the umbrella of someone else. And again, it's like, shows that you've got to really believe in what you're selling, because when you believe in it, it's not selling really when you believe in it, but it is a real thing to put yourself out there.
And just like walking in off the street being like, hi, I've got these products, I'm trying to try them. And everyone, it's always the first like 5 seconds is excruciatingly embarrassing, and then everyone's like, hey, and really nice. And I know that's another reason why launching in New Zealand was a nice idea, because you wouldn't get that response in London if you walked Selfridges. But it was, you do it, and you can't, the first one was felt awful, and then I was like, okay, no, this is okay, I can do this, and you get on with it.
So you start to get some stockists, you get some coverage, and so things start to move, the products start to sell.
Yeah, the Morning Dew sold out in 10 days, a 6-month supply, so then we're good problem, but then I'm like, different product.
Yeah.
And so that was really exciting. And then we won some global awards pretty quickly after launching.
How does that work? Do you then go, okay, I know there's a bunch of global awards. Obviously, cleverly, you're like, this is important, because if you get seen and this people love, and it's the first thing I noticed when I was looking through, so I was like, oh, it's credibility.
And that's it.
The industry has judged it and they have said it's great. So did you have a list? Had you researched a list of like awards you'd like to submit to and that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was exactly that. It was, and often people will just Google, what's just the best like serum they don't really, it's, a lot of people do want to do the work. Most people don't. Most people just like cut through the noise.
Yeah.
What's the best one? What's the one that's going to work? And the PR, the awards are independent third parties who are saying this is the good one. And that's those markers of about trust.
Yeah.
And credibility. But and then you apply, and some of them are like so expensive.
Yeah.
So it's really hard for small startup brands to even be in the game.
Mm.
But
you actually see the importance of them. So it's almost like building that cost in to get that is worth it.
Yes.
It's worth the spend, because it does just add that extra level of credibility. I see that you've done a little bit of influencer stuff. Would that be right? Do you do that through the PR, or is that, do you sort that directly?
Yeah, we did a send out at the beginning. It wasn't a huge list. It was just like a slightly curated list. I think influencer has really changed in the last couple of years. I've spoken to friends who launched brands like 3 or 4 or 5 years earlier than I did. And you'd get like an influencer being like, I use this, it's lovely. And that would sell out. That doesn't happen anymore. A little bit more wise to the fact that influencers work with brands in the same way advertising and media work with brands. And it was just really good for getting the word out. And now we do a kind of a more organic thing. We've got certain like friends of the brand who we continue to work with, and mostly it's just giving them free products. And we just lean into the people that are very evangelical about the brand. And
that are actual brand fans that would buy it, that do want to use it.
Yeah. And often they'll be like, no, I'm going to buy it now. And I'm like, no, because you're a social media influencer.
Yes.
Brand product. So yeah, that's, I don't know if that's even a strategy, but it was just leaning into the relationships that felt authentic and real. And
I think it's such an important part of the marketing mix. And I think that, yeah, people do have a funny thing around an influencer, but I've always looked at it from that's a new channel now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if it's done right,
yes,
then it's great. Yeah. I think the problem is that when it boomed, everyone was being sold to without realizing that they were being advertised to, and people get annoyed. But when you know that, I have no problem. Like, I think it's powerful.
Totally. And also, I love all the influencers. I love their curation of products.
I'm same.
Like, oh, where'd you get that?
It's just another way to get ideas, and it helps when you've got good product that works, so people are happy to try it, share it, talk about it. And it comes back down to that, doesn't it? That having the product, good product, is the ultimate thing that will drive that growth. But, but yeah. Cool. So yeah, so that's a year in, really. And you've just been, you introduced a third product?
Yeah. So we did, my timing's always been so bad. So we launched it in COVID, with all the delays of packaging, all that stuff. We launched our SPF the week of the floods. But yes, we felt, because our brand was all about the sun, the very obvious thing that was missing was SPF. We spent, and actually I wanted to launch it much earlier, but I was very intent on launching an SPF that people actually wanted to use, because most people just don't want to wear it under their makeup. It doesn't feel nice. It feels, and particularly it needed to be a mineral one, because I didn't want a chemical one, because the impact on our coral reefs and goes into your skin and absorbs it in that way, which can be irritating to sensitive skin. So I wanted it to be mineral, but the trade-off is normally with mineral sunscreen that it's thick and it's oily and it's
film. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So we spent a really long time getting that. And now it's a mineral sunscreen that feels like a chemical one, and that it rubs into the skin. An invisible finish. So yeah, that was really good. That was a really fun launch, and it was quite cool because we did have a little, like, semi little tiny launch, and it was nice actually to be able to meet a lot of the journalists that have been writing about Ray and the influencers who had been supporting the brands. Having an event a year later didn't end up being such a bad thing, but
it's nice too, because people then want to come.
Yeah,
because they know the brand by this point, and they know that it's great, and so they are like, oh yeah, because I know that journalists are so overwhelmed by everything that they're given. So it's actually possibly a better idea to do something that way around, where you've got a little bit of credibility and proof in the pudding before you are trying to come to my party.
Sitting there by yourself at the table,
I've actually got so many questions that are probably more suited to a skincare podcast or something like that. But I did want to ask you, and I've seen this, so without going back to my own experience, but back in the day when I was in this organic skincare brand, and it was very much the founder at the time was very passionate about natural skincare, organics and all that. And at that time I was really like, it's got to be natural. It's got to be natural. And since then I've seen a lot more about, look, lab created ingredients are not bad for you. Yes, of course, all these really harsh chemicals that no one had any idea that they were putting on their skin all these years ago. And when I was actually reading through your website, which I've done quite a few times, I noticed that whole conversation that you have also talked about, natural versus lab ingredients, just for my own self. Can you talk a little bit around that?
It's a really good point. I'm glad you asked that. I think there's been a lot of science shaming. And yes, there were some products, mostly in America, to be fair, that had ingredients in there that weren't as biocompatible with our skin or had some flare-ups and things. However, in reality, it's not that black and white. It's not that everything from nature is good for you and everything from the lab is bad for you. And I think there was a real greenwashing around that, which I think is wrong. In reality, there's lots of nature-based things that are toxic. There's some types of mushrooms. Cyanide comes from nature. There's a lot of nature that does not, is actually toxic to humans. Mm. And on the flip side, there's an incredible amount of amazing scientific ingredients that are completely safe, have decades worth of safety and efficacy data behind them, which I would never want to turn my back on. Mm. You also get incredible efficacy. I want that science on my face doing this, doing the job. I want those incredible years and years of cosmeceutical scientists working out how to get rid of my fine lines and my pigmentation. I want that. So I want that science on my face. So what we try and do is more, it's called clean cosmeceuticals, which is basically taking the best from both worlds. Nature is so clever, but equally so are people in the lab. We try and look at what are the highest performing ingredients from nature, and then what are the most effective ingredients from science. But then we also put them through a lens of, are they clean? Are they non-toxic to humans? How much data is behind it? And we classify all our ingredients by the Environmental Working Group, which is an independent body which rates every ingredient on toxicity and looks at all of that data. So anything that makes it into a Ray product has been gone through all of those filters. Mm. But I think that it's really for us about the combination of the best of both worlds.
Mm. Yeah, my thinking has so changed in the last couple of years since, as I've started to read more around that. And yeah. When I saw that, I was like, yeah, it's funny how you just get the stuff in your indoctrinated in you, like I can only use. Yes. And that limits you a lot as well. And it makes you scared of stuff that I actually know or ingredients that actually there is no need to be scared of.
No, you know. Totally. And also, when you get over 40, you really need those ingredients. You need any.
Yeah, I know you mean.
I just start wanting. Yeah. Grunty science-based ingredients.
Your skin does just change. And yeah, I'm 45 this year and you do all, and I've been fairly lucky with my skin, but it has changed and it's still changing all of the time. And what I know, it's funny because I realized the other day a cleanser that I have been using for quite some time. I was like, man, my skin is a lot drier recently. And there's lots, obviously, external factors that relate to that as well. But I was like, this is 40s. Like things are changing. And you do have to start rethinking what you've used your whole life or, you know.
Yeah, totally. Mm. Yeah. Our collagen just falls off a cliff after 30 and continues to go downhill from there. Yeah. And every aspect of our skin is always changing. But it's pretty sad actually. You do need some help. You don't need anything.
No, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. It was just about being aware of that stuff, and there are things that you can do that you can put on your skin that will help it feel better and that won't leave you feeling, oh, cool, I just have to have dry skin now for the rest of my life.
Totally, and it's about feeling good, embracing the wrinkles if that helps, if that's you, but just feeling good about your skin and making it healthy. And exactly.
So what does the business look like as we sit today?
So we've got our three products, as we said. We've got 45 stockists now across New Zealand, Australia and Hong Kong. And we are looking to launch into Europe next year.
Cool.
Just getting all our regulatory stuff organized for that, which is thrilling, but necessary. And we want to keep the range minimal. We do have some products that you still need your cleansers and moisturizer that will supplement the range. The two serums will always be the pillars.
Heroes,
but there will be some that will wrap around there. So we're also working on that at the moment. So it's always fun.
Tell me about Australia and Hong Kong then. How soon into it did you look to sell into there? And do you do that through your website as well? Like work?
Yes. We have a lot of localized websites that you.hk.co.uk at the moment, so people can shop internationally. We did that quite quickly after we won some global awards.
Yes, I need to think about actually for businesses that are looking to scale or have an idea that they would ultimately like to sell offshore as well, to think about that part of it.
Totally. And I think we couldn't get ray.com, so we got the .co.nz and then got the .au, and then we just looked at like the five markets that we would look at over the next couple of years and just bought the localized domain name. Having localized websites means you can also adjust the product, the pricing. We'd slightly adjust the pricing to account for shipping and things like that. So that gives us flexibility there.
Do you ship everything from here at this point? So then do you actively market into those?
No, we don't like advertising spend or anything in those markets. My original intention was to get it up to the UK because I know that market. I felt like I knew that market quite well. She's a sophisticated shopper. They love New Zealand and all that is clean and green and wonderful about that. That was my intention. But the Australian Hong Kong thing happened quite organically. Cool. A couple of people reached out having seen the brand and they felt like a good fit. And so while it wasn't like an export strategy to enter markets at the time, it just felt like a good fit. So I went with it. And my original plan was focus on the UK and then potentially circle back to Asia and Australia. But the other side of it. If it fits, then, you know, don't overthink it.
And it's a good example of working, like not being so set in your plans that you can't look at opportunities as they arise. And I'm imagining like it's not like you invest a huge amount of money or time into that, but just having those as options broadens your scope, even though it wasn't in your written down strategy or anything like that. Yeah. Did you write like full strategies and everything like that?
Yeah, I did write a business plan. I wrote a quite deep like marketing strategy, like what's our purpose and what's our USP and all of that kind of stuff, just because that made me feel good about investing in.
And it's important to do, even if it's just for yourself. It actually is.
One of the first things I did was actually write a press release because I was like, if I can't make it make sense on a piece of paper and make it seem interesting and new and have a unique point of view, then there's no point. And so I suppose that's how I'm trained as well. So that's where I started. But that was my way.
That's a really good idea, actually, because that helps you figure out what it looks like in the world and how you would sell it and why they should use it. Yeah.
Newsworthy. Yeah. My business plan is evolving, but I think I was here in New Zealand. I wanted to launch it in New Zealand. It's a great market to launch in. It's obviously smaller from a kind of building brand awareness and then with the idea of getting out to the UK and then into Europe and the US and Asia.
Great.
As the years go on.
Yes. Amazing. Yeah. Oh, and like you say, New Zealand is the best test market. I'm sure they tested FBOSS on us, I think, didn't they? Do you remember that back in the day? I'm pretty sure we were one of the first to get FBOSS cards with pins. And I've heard that before, that they do test a lot of stuff on us.
I know we often used to get movies earlier than America because they would just see how it landed. Yeah.
I love that though, having that global vision, but starting in your local market and figuring things out and what works and doesn't work. Yeah. So what does a typical day or week look like for you then?
Oh, it's chaos. It'll be me. So after this, I'm going to the lab. We're looking at reviewing some different textures and ingredients and talking about lots of that. I try and spend time with my retail partners, educating the people who are selling on the floor, because some of our ingredients are cosmeceutical. I want to make sure that they're all really educated. So I'll often do like retail visits, working with the PR team and looking at what's happening for social, trying to work out the logistics of what packaging componentry we need in this month versus based on the forecast and all of that kind of stuff, which is less glamorous, but very necessary.
All part of it.
That's not my background. So like, how many caps are we going to need in December? I'm like, oh God, is this when I asked that?
Yeah.
No, it's you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's always really varied.
Just you at the moment. Have you got any help at the moment?
I do have one person who works with me, and then I have a ton of freelancers who I can dial in and out. That's been really good because you don't have the commitment of full-time salary, but you can get different people based on what you need at the time. So I've had some consultants or freelancers, whatever you want to call them, with me from the very beginning across my website and PR and social and packaging and things. Yeah.
You just got to wear all the hats though, right? That's the thing.
With the contractor in the middle. And yeah, totally.
I do think though, it's like the best way to learn and know your business when you, and for many founders, that is the case, right? In the early days, you wear every hat and that way you know exactly what's needed and how to grow those. And then as you grow bigger, your situation changes. But you've got that real inherent understanding of your business and what it needs and how it works.
Totally. And an appreciation for all the different parts of it. Like the finance side of it was this, I'm learning all of this. The logistics side of it, I'm learning all of this. The regulatory side. And you need to appreciate the importance and the work that goes into all of those other parts as well. So it is important. Even if I'm a bit resistant, it is important. Yeah.
So what are the values or ethos that drive Ray?
Yeah, I think efficacy is one of the key ones, like performance of ingredients and functionality of formula is very important because that's why people are buying it for result. I think simplicity is another really important thing to us, just not overcomplicating it and focusing on the function and also from an aesthetic and design point of view. I think like responsibility is another one to Papatanuku, our Mother Earth, who we harvest from, as well as our people, the sustainability of the ingredients for generations to come, going back to my farm and all of those kind of core values. We try and work with ingredient suppliers that have that as one of their key driving values as well. Innovation, like we really get excited about new ingredients and new formulas, and innovation is a key one. And then I think craftsmanship as well, making sure right down to packaging and how wherever that Ray shows up, it needs to feel like it has a certain standard. And I've cut a lot of things or stopped a lot of things that have cost me money, but I want to make sure that when Ray shows up, people are like, that is a certain level.
All of those values that you've talked about, from what I can see of your brand, all checks out. You can see that across what you've built. And like you say, like simplicity, but it's not just in the brand, it's in the products and how they work. And I think that's so important to have a really clear idea of what your values are. And
yes,
because that drives everything you do, doesn't it?
Every decision. Yeah. And we really do. Every decision we make, and we are filtering through those values always. So it just, means that when the brand shows up, it feels like it's consistent in that way.
So what's been the biggest highlight so far?
I think honestly, the really early moments when we first started getting the results of our customer trials, when we knew we were like, okay, we're onto something. People are like, I had friends being like, I need more of those samples. That was a really cool moment where you were like, okay, this is something. The products actually work. That was really cool. I think, and when our products sold out as well, it was really exciting. And when on that first day, you spend so long thinking about that launch day. And then when you start hearing that Shopify ping and getting those orders in, it's, oh, this is real. This is not just me and my mood boards and my late at night. This is a real thing. And like, people want to buy it. And I'm just always so grateful when people do. And yeah, they were some of the earliest things were really, really exciting.
In another life, I had a little online shop for a very short time. And I remember the first sale of someone that wasn't someone I knew.
Yes.
And being like, my gosh, how have they found me? It was such a thrill because it's, oh, they don't have to buy it. I feel like those little wins are great wins.
Yes, totally.
Has there been any moment that's been a real game changer that's been like, this has really changed it for the brand?
So winning that award that we won, Sapura Beauty Awards in London, they're like the Oscars of the beauty industry. We won Best New Serum globally and Best New Skincare Brand globally in the UK. And so we had a lot of like distributors and suppliers and things reaching out after that. We weren't ready for any of it. We didn't even have a proper global website or anything, but that was a real game change in just terms of global awareness of the brand and interest. We saw a large Shopify metrics, or suddenly it was lighting up like the world quite visually, which was very cool.
Did you get notified by email for that? Did it just?
Well, no, they just tagged us in an Instagram. They were saying come to London, and I was like, oh, I can't. I'd love to come to London, but I'm a startup and got two kids under seven, and so we declined to actually go because also I was like, it's such a long shot.
Yeah, and then you're like, and the finalist.
We're looking on Instagram. There's all these people in ball gowns, and we won the two big awards of the night. And I was like, oh, stupid, why didn't we go? But yeah, so. Yeah, they just tagged us on Instagram as it was all happening.
And you're like, oh my gosh, okay. Yeah.
And it was morning for me, of course. So I was like, what's going on? What's happening?
Yeah. Doing the daycare drop off or whatever.
Stop the morning report.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. And then, oh, we just found out Rita Ora's been using our products, which was very cool. And so that was a fun little moment. So we've been down to all her houses around the world. So she's got stock.
Please, you'll never run out. Don't ever stop. Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. Did you hear that like through word of mouth or did she share it?
So an influencer we worked with posted about the products and she knows that person and was commenting like, oh, I love this brand. And so we're like, how can we get products to her? Through a friend of a friend of a friend.
Yeah. I was going to say, obviously there's that Kiwi connection there in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Everyone can get to anyone somehow. So you're like, okay, we've got it. We're in. That's awesome. In terms of marketing, we've talked a lot about marketing and different things that you've done. What do you think so far is your sort of advice or what do you think for you is the most successful form of marketing that you do?
So I think if you're not coming from a marketing background just to get that really clear marketing strategy up front, what's your purpose? How are you going to wrap your storytelling around that? We've got our pillars that we do storytelling around, sustainability, ingredients, et cetera. Having that written down has been really helpful at guiding all aspects of the brand and how we show up. I think absolutely social media has been great. We run ads on Facebook to try and build our awareness because we're still a very new brand. But PR has really, I think the skincare, it's quite a category specific thing, has just been so great. When we've had editors raving about, we had one in Australia from Fashion Journal, which is like, these products have literally changed my skin. And it was just like amazing. This incredible article about how it cleared up all her adult acne. And she's tried so many products and these women. We see immediate ching ching when what's happened. There's some article. So that really moves the needle for us at least. But I think the other thing that's really worked is having, and it's an expense when you're starting up, but having some assets, the photo shoot that we did at the beginning, having some really nice product shots, building a world for your brand to live in that has its very unique aesthetic just really helps to establish your unique brands.
I think that's so right, actually. And I feel like I have these things that when I talk to people, I harp on about, but it's putting the money aside to invest in those assets, the PR, all of those things. I think a lot of people see them as the nice to have.
Yeah.
And they can't afford that. They'll do that later when they've got more money, myself included, in various different things that I've done, even though I believe in it, but you just think, oh, I just don't have the money for that right now. I'll just focus on this. But actually, it's almost like you can't afford not to, because those are the things that will drive your brand, drive your story, and drive people back to your business.
Totally. If I had a choice between launching with five products or launching with one and putting the rest of the money aside for like actually building a good like marketing PR strategy, I would 100% do the latter. So I think product is everything, but there are a lot of good products out there in the world that people don't know about. So do need to, in today's climate, be able to tell that story and cut through in a way that get noticed. So that's just the reality of this now.
And so I think Ray just does it so well. Like I said, I just noticed it. Everything you've said has backed up what I noticed, and that every point is considered and thought through, and you can see it and it works. Obviously, people love the product.
Yeah, true.
Challenges. What would you say have been your biggest challenges so far?
I think like launching in COVID was really hard. It definitely added 6 months to a year on the development timeline. Just all of the delays with packaging. Like we were literally, the whole of China shut down. Mm. Like, we get our bottles made in China, the formula's made in New Zealand, but the glass bottles you can't get made here. But we were literally like about to get them shipped out and the whole of China just shut down. They're like, we don't know when we're going to open. And at one point I was like, I'm getting on a plane. I'm coming. Just going to get 1,000 bottles, put them in my suitcase. And I'm going to launch this damn brand. Mm. And they were like, can't, like, you have to go through one of those Chinese government managed isolation things. And I was like, oh, okay, forget that.
Okay, I won't do that.
But it was really frustrating at that time. And I think even now, there's a cost of living crisis. Do you want to spend $140 on a serum and when you're not sure what the next year looks like in terms of your mortgage rates and everything? So all of that, the climate in which we've launched hasn't been awesome. But then there's also that thing, they call it a lipstick effect, don't they? Where people also just want a little hit of luxury for themselves when things aren't great. And maybe you can't afford to buy a new house or a car, but you can invest in a little bit in your skincare. I think that's been really challenging. Then there's also been like mistakes on packaging with lots of all those kind of things as well. But I think...
And they do happen to everyone, don't they? It doesn't matter how thorough or... That is just life. Those mistakes do just happen, don't they?
Okay. And our pumps, when we first got the pumps, we were like, yay, pumps. We'll use the same pumps on the serums. We did the SPF. And then it turned out because of the minerals and the mineral sunscreen, they were getting clogged in the chamber. And just like stuff like, there you go. You couldn't have anticipated that. Or maybe we should have. Maybe we should have done more testing. But there's just a lot of that kind of thing that happens the whole time.
And so that's all the stuff for a small brand. When you're a big conglomerate, those things get absorbed in. But when you're a small brand, those are massive. And they are things that you're like, great, I've got 70,000 pumps that I might not be able to use, or whatever. You know, so they have big impact, which is probably the really great thing about you still being in that startup phase, that you don't have these huge overheads and 50 staff. You can anticipate those challenges a little bit and work with them, because it is an interesting world at the moment, isn't it? Must be constantly just like looking ahead. What can I anticipate is coming tomorrow?
Totally. And then there's a whole bunch that you just can't anticipate either. You have to try and find a way to like surf that wave in. So it's all part of it, isn't it?
So you're only obviously fairly early into your journey. Is there anything you would do differently even at this point?
Oh, so much. Honestly, absolutely. But what I've tried to do in this and in life is, I can't remember if I read this somewhere or something, but it's really helped me. Look at yourself and your previous versions of yourself as like a paper chain, as little cutout doll, paper chain dolls. And I find looking back on me a year ago in the midst of it, as almost a different person, I'm much more empathetic and kind to my previous self. I'm like, wow, you found a way through. That was a really hard thing and you got through it. And yeah, you missed some bits here and there, but ultimately you did it. And I find myself really being more gentle with myself. And everyone's like, you idiot, why did you do that, this, that, and the other? But I think just trying to be like, she was doing that. There was a lot going on. And I also look at that future looking as well. What version of myself do I want to show up when I'm years time when I'm 50, and how can I do that girl a favor by what do I need to do to get her there? So I think that's really helped me to not get frustrated with myself or try and spend too much time and energy focusing on what I could have, should have, would have.
And it is, I think that's the thing, is you're always going to have things that you're like, oh, but I possibly could have done that better. But also you only know what you know when you know it.
So try and be nice to yourself.
Totally. Okay, so who or what have been the biggest influences in your work, business, life?
I think definitely my husband, and it's probably pretty cheesy, but he has been, it requires a lot of both of us for me to do this, and time away and all of that good stuff. He has been, and he is a copywriter by trade, so he's been really helpful with, you know.
That's a handy person to have, right?
Like, can you look at this? I'm like, gosh, you're good at this. So that's awesome. I think also just having lived abroad, having lived in the UK and in America, you get lots of different stimulus and inspired by different things. And I think the other thing, I suppose, is like nature itself and Mother Earth. And we really lean really heavily into these native natural botanicals, which are super inspiring, and their resilience and the way that they've did to a harsh environment is the real inspiration for the brand.
Yeah, they're pretty.
How do you keep on top of new ingredients? Or not new ingredients, but are you just constantly like researching and thinking and talking to your team and all that kind of thing?
Yep. And I'm really passionate about it. So I'm just naturally leaning into that a lot because it's exciting to me.
I was going to say, it must be a whole new world of, I know you've worked in that industry, but this is a whole exciting new world to delve into and to learn about. And
yeah, you know, like being in the lab and all these different formulations and the chemistry of it is really cool. I think it's awesome. So I love that side of it. If in the future, I would love to have a lab on our farm where we're just testing all the different, there's so much there in New Zealand that just hasn't really been tested. So that's what I would ultimately love to be doing. Yeah.
Cool. Businesses and brands that you admire.
I think brands that have a really clear sense of purpose are very exciting to me. There's one, a New Zealand company that called Woolaid that have
created
sticking plasters. And I just have this image in my head of war fields, that were battlefields that would have had plastic, or highly polluted areas that would have just been full of these little plastic band-aids. Now it's, whoa, I think that's so cool. So stuff like that. Or this is a similar thing, but there's a brand called the Girlfriend Collective who have founded a sportswear brand when they realized there'd be more plastic than fish in the ocean by 2050. And so they're using recycled water bottles and fishing nets and other plastic waste from the sea to make these products. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Brands like that I find really inspiring. And then I'm really into design and art from a product and packaging perspective. I'm looking at brands like that. We looked a lot to actually fragrance when we were developing our bottles, because that was about like more aesthetically interesting, I think, the skincare.
So right, actually, because fragrance has always pushed the edges with design of bottles and stuff like that. You think of some of those 80s perfumes like that, like outrageous.
It's now Christian, sometimes you get those crazy. Yeah,
so true. I didn't think that. Skincare's always been semi-standardized, but it's perfume that was always really jazzy. That's so true. Okay, best business advice you have received and or would love to pass on?
This is one that I still struggle with and need to try and lean into more, but making time for yourself. And I think as a founder of a startup, you're on adrenaline. There was a time last year where I was just like surviving on adrenaline and coffee and like children's leftover dinners. And I was like, this is not the vibe. And having to like really carve time out for myself to do exercise, listen to a podcast, just not be sitting there on my laptop is still what I need to try and do. Also, I think I find like sometimes just like getting out and changing the scene, I'll do some of my best thinking on like a ferry or in an airport terminal, walking in a park. And actually sometimes you've got to get out of the grind of your everyday to get that perspective. I've been struggling with the problem and suddenly it becomes clear when you're in a different environment. So actually just been like, actually I'm just gonna go to Waiheke for a day and just have a break.
Especially when you work from home as well, or you're at home a lot, because you just need that. I know I keep on my list is to go and work from our local library one day, just so I'm not around my things. But then I haven't got around to doing that. So there's the conundrum.
Yes, totally.
Cool. So we've talked a little bit about it, but what is the future for your business? Where are you heading?
I think we would love to continue to be discovering these really cool New Zealand ingredients and testing them for their full therapeutic use. And that scans across fungi and alpine botanicals and marine algae and all of these beautiful things. So that's really, if I look really far into the future, that's what excites me.
Cool.
And then in the short term, getting a few products to market that will complement the existing ones, looking at new markets and expanding in a way that feels reasonable. I think the other thing you hear so many stories about this brand has taken off and actually you feel the need to be like, I need to scale and grow. And actually sitting back and being like, that's not your part. Just take a breath and calm down. And what is going to make you happy? And you don't need to be working 14 hours a day isn't actually going to serve you. So actually, what's the right growth path for you? And I get excited and impatient and want to move to the next thing quite quickly. But each time I remind myself to just slow down and just one step at a time. So, yeah.
Future's exciting though.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool. What are you passionate about outside your work?
So obviously my kids. I've got a 4 and a 7-year-old little monkeys. Love hanging out with them. And I love cooking. Like, we do big Sunday lunches here with different friends. It's become a bit of a thing, Sundays here. So I love recipes and food and not so different formulating products, I think.
Yes.
Different combination. And I love and miss traveling. It's one of the great things of living in London is the proximity to Europe and all of the experiences and cultures there. We've talked about that a bit, but I love, all these new experiences.
Many factors with that one though. A 4 and a 7-year-old, I've got a 4 and a 6-year-old. So means like times $1 million for every travel you do. Like, all of a sudden it's not even just that I'm busy. It's that, like, you're paying for 4 people instead of 2 in the hotel rooms and 2, everything.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. My husband, he's born and bred in London. And so we're going up this year. And it's just, we're like, yes, we want to, we're dying to. Yeah. I've got so many amazing friends and family up there. But I'm also like, how many days jet lag? And it's a lot.
Got to factor in a lot of that. Time will come back, I'm sure. Yes. And what does success look like to you, personally, professionally, or both?
Yeah, I think it's going back to that point about what trajectory you are on and what makes sense for you. I think having a good balance of professional and personal is actually the key to it, right? So you can't have one without the other. And equally, often sometimes when you're leaning too much into one, the other one just will suffer. If I'm at a retail event, I physically can't be at school when my daughter's running cross country. There's just like physical reality. So I think trying to define that balance and actually taking time out from the business is actually sometimes the best thing you can do for the business. So I think success is if we can grow Ray and have it a few more products, a few more markets, then that would professionally be awesome. And personally, I think just having the time to hang out with my little kiddies and my husband and giving as my energy to that as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tired mum.
Yes.
Hard, isn't it? Because it's the age old question, isn't it? How to find that perfect balance. Yeah. And it is hard because as women, not all women, but some of us, we want at all. I want to be the best mum, but I have desires and dreams for business. Yeah. And I want to do this, but I want to do that. And even if you're not a mum, I want to achieve this, but I want that. So women have a lot to juggle, which I know is just so cliche, but it is what it is.
And I think as well, like, a lot of us grew up in homes where there were more traditional gender roles. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of us are still doing still doing a lot of those roles just because that's what we've grown up. So you're still doing maybe more of the washing or whatever, the childcare, but then also working, but then also, so it's still built into us potentially to take more of the household stuff on as well. So and my husband's very modern but I'll just be doing it before he has a chance to, because that's subconsciously what I've grown up with.
Totally.
Yeah, so that.
And I think it's this whole thing, and I have this conversation all the time. I'm similar. I've got a husband that does lots of stuff and is so great. But it's this mother load thing that I didn't know about before I had kids, which is the, okay, I'm going away for work. What's everyone eating? Oh, I've got a plan. Okay, he'll take them to school, but I've got to make sure the outfits are out. And I know, again, I'm always conscious. I don't want this podcast to be like, oh, it's so hard, you know, but I'm like, they're just sometimes the realities of juggling life.
Totally.
And everyone has their own versions of the juggle, kids or no kids or whatever, but I guess it's modern day life, right? Modern day life is a blimmin' juggle, but anyway. Hey, look, that is the end of the big questions. Yes. Thank you so much for sharing your journey. I feel like I've interrupted you about a million times, but I could probably talk to you for another couple of hours. I love your story. I love what you've created in such a short space of time. I know there was a lot of time planning before yes. that, since to market. I just think what you're building is wonderful and it just looks so great, but it's got the proof behind it as well, which is even better. So thank you so much for sharing your story and answering all my nosy questions. The final part of the podcast is the quickfire faves that we will just rattle through. So three items you could not live without.
A notebook. I'm pretty old school. I need like it all written down. A blender. I'm like really into smoothies and coffee with my kids that wake me up all night at the moment. Yes, that would be coffee. Right.
That's three good things. Which app for business and or life do we need?
I've just started using a balance meditation app, which is really helpful for me. Sometimes if I'm waking up in the middle of the night and I'm like, oh my God, that thing that I haven't thought in my brain starts going, that's really been cool. I really like that little app. I also have at the moment, there's a e-currency exchange app that I'm using constantly.
Yeah, that a lot, right?
Yeah, which is an awesome one. They're my two at the moment.
Cool.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of the, I've heard of the XE one, but I haven't heard of the balance one. So I'm sure to check that one out.
Yeah.
What have you watched lately that we must see?
Are we watching Bear at the moment? Have you seen that with the Chicago-based?
So good. Yeah.
So good. And then the other one, obviously we've been watching Succession, but the other one that's maybe less awareness around is Cleo with a K. And it's about when the Berlin Wall comes down and this like agent, it's subtitles, which is good for me because otherwise I like find
myself.
You have
to focus, right? Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I really love that. The character in that is awesome. And it's quite interesting always when they're grounded and not factually 100% correct, but grounded in the historical event that helps you to understand that a bit more. So yeah, Cleo with a K, I really love that as well.
Great. When we are in Auckland, where should we go out to eat or drink?
Oh, yeah. So I really like, there's a little wine bar called Annabelle's Wine Bar in Three Lamps in Ponsonby, which I love. It feels like a little European, tiny little corridor of a wine bar, which is awesome. I also love Peachy on Kay Road for amazing pasta, and Bar Celeste also on Kay Road, yummy food.
Good. What are you currently listening to? What should I add to my Spotify playlist?
Well, I've gone really like old school funk these last couple of weeks, like Chaka Khan, Stevie Wonder, Pac Man. I've gone, I'm just like partying around.
It's like motivating, right?
Oh, I know. It's putting me in a good mood. Yeah, that's my current.
Okay. Look playlist. Back at the old school. I love it.
Yeah, I know.
Which podcasts, apart from this one, do you never miss?
Yes. There's a one called Second Life, which is quite good, which is about women who have had a career and have changed it, often quite a shift to a different career. And you like really interesting questions about, but how did you do that? And what money you do? Like very in the nitty gritty of actually not just like the lovely story of how it's, but actually, how did you do that? So I found that really cool.
I love Hillary. I listen to that, but it's been an inspiration for this one because I love that podcast and I love how she's got such a great sort of relationship with her guests, and also she's built such an amazing business in her own right. I love that one too.
Yeah.
What is your go-to recipe that you love to cook for yourself and or others?
There is this, talking a lot about pasta today, but there's this pasta dish that's like a burnt butternut fried sage pasta, which is can be like sometimes if I'm feeling really adventurous and I'll make the pasta and then you make this kind of concoction and then you wrap it up as like an open lasagna or a ravioli. That is like the burnt butter and the butternut and the sage is like amazing combination.
Is that one, is that a recipe you've got or is that one that you've fashioned
there is a
together
recipe,
yourself?
I think there is a recipe somewhere, but I just do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
To your work.
I started with a recipe though. And I often do that. I'll be like, I feel like this kind of thing and I'll read a recipe because I'm like, always like to see like how a chef will put something together or the technique or, and then sometimes just go off piece.
That's a true foodie that's got the confidence to be like, actually I'll add this to it or whatever. That's so good. Cool. And finally, what do you read? What should we read next?
I just reread a book that has actually stayed with me for 20 years, God of Small Things. And it's set in India and I enjoyed it as much the first time as I did the second time as I did the first. Mm. It's just beautiful, very clear characters and storytelling. And then at the moment, I'm reading Three Women by Lisa.
I've got that on my list and I haven't got to it yet. But yeah, I've heard great things about that. Are you enjoying it?
I am. Yeah, it's good. It's three different women and it's tracking their stories. But it's just so that...
But they're true stories, aren't they? Pretty sure it is not fiction.
I believe it because they're so complex. You almost couldn't make them up, but it's such an interesting portrayal of women and how the different circumstances we find ourselves in and what we're dealing with. And it's, it's really...
That's just put that back on my radar, actually. Yeah. So that's good. Thank you for that. Yeah. Okay, so that's it. That's the last of the Quickfire Faves, the end of the podcast. Thank you so much. It has been wonderful. And yeah, like I said, I just loved hearing your story and I'm really excited to keep watching Ray grow and see where you head.
Thank you. Oh, it's been so fun. Thanks for having me. It's been a joy. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I would love to hear what you think about the podcast. And if you wanted to tell your friends about Super Creative, I would just be ever so grateful. If you'd like to keep listening, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And if you wanted to rate and review, that would be amazing. For more information, find us at Super Creative Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Bye.